I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to another episode of On the Line. In today's episode, we're going to be talking about gut health, which is maybe something that people are a little embarrassed to talk about, which is why I'm so excited to do it. So let me introduce to you the Mac twins.
Yes.
Is that what you guys go
by? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sitting in a room with two people who look exactly the same.
Do you think we look really similar?
Yeah.
Same faces.
You really do.
We're getting, yeah. Our faces like move in a different way. So when we're static, apparently, I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't know. But apparently, so we've been told.
But you've got the same, like, voice and accent, and
yeah.
Obviously, and yeah. Like, it's just, I mean, twins always make me just very confused.
We're weirdos. Twins are, all twins are weirdos.
But when we see twins, we're like, oh my God, yeah, that's weird. Do you know what I mean? So it's fine. Yeah.
Okay, so first of all, I would love you to tell me about yourselves before we get into the gut stuff. Who are you guys? You're DJs.
Yeah, so it's a bit of a random story as
do you want to do the tale or
no?
You go for it, sister.
Okay, so we never want, basically the nutshell short end of the story is that we never wanted to work together. I moved to London 5 years before Alana. We had very separate lives, and then we were headhunted by MTV.
How
we were at a party and this and our friend's manager was like, have you ever thought about presenting? And we were like, well, we used to narrate the school plays. And we kind of always wanted, to do it, but we didn't really particularly want to do it together. And we had our own things going on. So Alana was a dancer and I was a theatre producer. And then they were like, oh, you can be backstage at every festival this summer. And we were like, sold. Because it was like MTV and Kiss were doing Verge magazine at the time. So we were like the first kind of faces of Verge magazine. And then we were like, we'll just do it for the summer and that'll be it. And then we got headhunted by the BBC. So we did the One Extra Breakfast Show. And then we all sort of snowballed from there. And then our dad died, unfortunately. So we moved back to Scotland to kind of down tools and was like, look, what do we actually care about? Because he was in his 50s and he died of a heart attack really suddenly. And I think the entertainment industry is great and fine. But we kind of were like, there's more to life than that. So we came back to London. We got the Virgin Radio Saturday Night Show, which was great. So the DJing kept going. And then we did a show called Love Island.
Has anyone ever heard of that show?
Yeah.
Then nobody watches.
I don't think anyone watches it. And then so that side was all kind of taken off. But meanwhile, we were volunteering for twin research at King's College, which basically means you get like a free BUPA test. You get like your body, you're like chief guinea pig, because your body just gets tested for everything.
So you just signed up for this randomly one day?
Yeah. Okay. Our friend, it was actually our PR at the time, she's a twin, and she was like, you should go and do it because it's great. And we were like fascinated to find out physiologically what's different between us, because I was going to do medicine at uni before I went to drama school, and Alana was doing business and law. So we kind of, I have always had a sciencey background and kind of wanted to find out about it. And you do a quite cool test. I mean, it sounds like it's thingy, but you don't get paid for it. Or that. It's like pure voluntary. And then Tim Spector, who heads up the research facility there, he's like the father of the twins.
Faja.
Yeah, it was like, do you guys want to have your guts analysed? And I was like, because I was always a stone heavier than Alana. I didn't know why. Alana had arthritis. Like basically our health paths were complete opposite in our life. So we'd never had the same diseases, and we'd never had anything that was the same. It was really weird.
And was this something you guys talked about, like how different your health was?
Yeah, we sort of were just like, but actually to be honest, it wasn't until we started doing it that you kind of dig deep into that. And you were like, so I had like acne and I had arthritis when we were younger, and the doctors couldn't understand why, because it was meant to be genetic or viral and she didn't have a virus. But turns out it was down to her microbiome. So I had been on a course of antibiotics before, and there was loads of different reasons. Anyway, we were like, sure, we'll have our guts analysed. And the Human Genome Project, this was maybe the short, but we'll get into the gut. But basically, the Human Genome Project just happened in the States, where they realised that they could sequence DNA and use big data to kind of make sweeping statements or guesswork on medical issues. And they realised that they could use that same technology to kind of sequence the gut, your gut bacteria. So they did this. We had to send our poo off in the post every day for 2 months.
This is something that I, you know, people are telling me about sending poop in the mail. Yeah. And it's like, how many packages are poop?
Oh my God, genuinely, I was thinking that the other day, because...
That'd be good, that's that way.
Oh my God, you know, you have to put... Check that.
You have to put on it, you know, like a lot of time you've got to declare if it's like Royal
Stop.
Mail. You've
that's
got to
what declare I wondered.
I wonder if people just lie.
But sometimes there's like whole poos and then there's just like a swab of a bit of poo on it. So I guess the whole, like an entire poo would be...
Yeah,
you'd probably
something.
Have to say, like, this has got a poo in it.
So many poops. Yeah,
and then we had
questions.
To have colonoscopies.
I want to know about that.
Yeah, so basically just put a camera up your bum.
Fine. But it didn't take tell us. Take a bit of your like colon these, out. But
oh, they do take a biopsy? Does that hurt?
I think it was like a net. It feels like a smear test.
Smear test, yeah.
In your bum.
In your bum. But what in Tim didn't tell us was the doctor was really hot. I was furious. I was like lying there and he's like, so do you live in Kentish Town? Meanwhile, like literally there's a big screen and you can see...
Oh, your
bum.
Poo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can actually see like poop.
Yeah. Just floating past, floating by. And you're like, cool. And he's talking you through it. Meanwhile, giving him a chat about where he lives in the pub next to his thing. Do you know what I mean? I was like, dear Lord.
But this was about 5 years ago, before like the sort of gut health was coming into the mainstream, because they do a lot of medical science on twins because they're the best control. Because you know that you've got the same DNA, so they control everyone else. So they found out from our bodies that even though we had 100% the same DNA, we only had 30 to 40% the same microbiome, so that the bacteria in and around. And it's difficult when you say the word gut health because people are like, oh, what do you mean, my beer belly? And you're like,
or
yes.
Or yackle.
Yes, sort like, of. But basically, when we say gut health, we actually mean like the bacteria in and around and all over our bodies, and which actually we have the same amount of bacteria. Well, I think it's 1.32 to every human cell. So we're just as much bacteria as we are human.
But wait, what? That's my brain already hurts.
Exactly, overwhelming. When we first found it out, we were like, oh God, get off.
Wash me.
Yeah. But basically, the majority of that bacteria is housed within your gut.
Okay. And that's why we call it... 98% of it is good and does good things. Breaks down hormones, secretes like stuff like amino acid. We won't get too sciencey, but basically it's working for us, not against us, the bacteria. Anyway, so when we found this out, we were like, that's cool. But at the time, it was quite like a middle-class woo-woo thing. Like The Guardian were talking about like kombucha, kefir, woohoo. And it was kind of like, and actually what we realised was that it was probably going to be the future of healthcare, which is what people are starting to realise now, because the gut is linked to so many things. So we did like a little YouTube series interviewing some of the scientists. And the reason we called it The Gut Stuff is just because our pals were like, one minute we were at the Brits and the next minute we were doing that. And we were like, oh, they were like, why are you speaking to these scientists? And we were like, oh, just that gut stuff. And then we made a really shit website that Alana made a logo that she's still proud of, but it was really shit. And we were just putting the scientific papers up. We did a YouTube series and then 6 episodes turned into 36 episodes. And we got like the top scientists in the world.
And you produced this all yourself? Or?
Yeah, we had like a videographer, but it was just like us trekking up to Cambridge. You know, like, hi there, could you talk to us about the microbiome? And then we're like, why are two Virgin Radio DJs wanting to figure this? Anyway, and then the kind of rest is history. And yeah, it's been quite a journey, but it's good because we're able to... kind of take everyone on the journey with us, because we are still learning, but they still use our bodies for all the experiments as well.
Oh, right. So are you still
guinea pigs.
Doing the DJ stuff or?
Just now we're doing both jobs full time, which is quite
something. We're not practicing what we preach in the way of self-care. We're working 18
Holy
hour
moly.
Days.
Yeah, we turned actually 18-hour days.
We went to like a gut health retreat because our staff were like, kicking us out the door like, please leave, you have to leave. We took over Old Street tube station, actually, which is near here, and we did 4 gigs that week, so we were flying in and out. And then we went to this gut health retreat and I was like, oh yeah, our guts are gonna be amazing, because the woman's like, so your platelets are low, your white blood cells are low, and your cortisol levels are through the roof, like your immune system is absolutely short species. When did you last have a day off? And we were like, looked at our diaries, it was like 5 months before that, like, not even an afternoon off. So we were like, okay,
and
we're not
what is a day off?
know. Well,
what does that mean? Does that mean laying on the couch for 5 hours? Like, what does a day off mean?
I know. I always struggle with that sort of like, because I think you're always thinking, if you're thinking about work, you're not a day off.
Yeah.
It probably is just not looking at emails.
Okay.
And not doing any work at all.
Right.
Probably going to a yoga class.
Uh-huh.
And or going out with friends and then
getting drunk.
Is it?
Yeah, getting drunk.
Okay.
Yeah. And just not being near our, like, not being near emails or your phone.
Not doing serious things.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just try not to think about it. And maybe just like binging on Netflix. Like my last day off, I just binged Sex Education.
God, that was a good show.
So
I've not watched it yet.
Oh, you need to.
Really
so
good.
Good.
Yeah.
Really good. So good.
Okay, so what is the gut stuff? So you did your YouTube series.
Yeah.
You've got an Instagram and you talk about gut stuff. But what do you do?
So it just was meant to be a bit of an awareness campaign and just making the... Because a lot of people that were talking about it, it was so complex. And, you know, a lot of people that were talking about it were in that field. So people were just switching off because they were like... Even the word microbiome, they were like... Meh.
I still don't know what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite sensationalised as well. So people were like... So, like, obviously, the gut-brain axis is a real thing. But a lot of the studies have been done on mice and we're still in very early stages.
But I think we had just set out to make the information fun and accessible and then just empower people with the knowledge. And I think as soon as you know that that your gut is important and it's linked to overall health, like that just tiny bit of knowledge is empowering for people. And then we sort of set out to do that in a fun way. So we did it through live events at supper clubs and we took over Old Street Station and we're doing that around the UK doing road shows. And then everyone was like, right, okay, that information's all good and well, but how can I change my lifestyle and how did... And for us, like, we are not wanting people to 360, 180 their lives. It's about small changes.
Not done that. Yeah, like,
exactly.
We still go out and do
I mean, we're DJs.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, we're DJs.
and I think that's what resonated with a lot of people, that we weren't just these angels that were coming in and sort of like... And then as we went on, and then we were, you know, partnering with brands and things to be able to give people the tools to change their gut health. But also as well, like, as we've been going on, like, our mission is obviously to empower people with the knowledge of gut health, but health and wellness is a middle class luxury and it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be this woo-woo, you know, expensive goop style luxury. It should be, people see health as just not being ill and they see wellness as this expensive thing, and I think they should be the same thing.
I think as well, and it was about like ease of things. So we have like gut started boxes, so we have like a product range and we have things, so there's like that, and then we've got a series of ebooks coming out this year, and then we have a services arm to the site. So the NHS is amazing, but unfortunately GPs don't have to have even 1 hour of nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a healthcare system built with that gap, and 1 in 3 people in the UK have digestive issues, and that's due to a number of things. That's due to sanitising the hell out of everything, processed foods that basically we've killed off 200 species of bacteria that we'll never get back, that are important to us. So we set up a free Ask a Nutritionist service on the site, and we're building that out and working with dietitians to build out some clinical advice on the site, not to replace the NHS, but just to try and give people advice, and we're partnering with charities and stuff in order to do that. So it's kind of become like a bit of a beast in itself, because we were the first consumer-led brand to talk about gut health. Obviously, there were small kombucha brands and things like that, but now we've got a bit of a beast in our hands.
I think as well, we can get a Love Island audience talking about the inside out rather than the outside in, then job done in that sense. And thinking about that millennial audience in a preventative way rather than us all just thinking about our health when we get ill.
Yeah. Do you think people care more, like, lately?
Definitely. Absolutely. I think... There was a big study came out last week that I was reading on the train here, actually, and it was basically that like 53% of millennials would rather spend money on their health than save money.
Okay.
Which is like a huge stat. And I can testify to that. Yeah, exactly. No savings over here.
Overdraft.
But I think it's because it's almost impossible for our generation to have assets now in houses and cars and things like that. And I think that's, we are concentrating more like self-care, not to be wanky in that sense, but experiences and feeling good. I think, you know, people just... Before, like our mum's generation would, you know, just get by in life. And I think we want to feel good and we want to be the sort of best versions of ourselves. So I think, and seemingly like 25% of, young uni students now don't drink. I'm like, how do you make mistakes?
No, yeah.
How do you make
mistakes?
Yeah.
That we make?
So like they're like, yeah, they're not going. Kids aren't going clubbing now. They're going to the gym, and I think there's definitely a balance to be had. I think we might be at risk of going too extreme with it.
Mm-hmm.
You still got to have fun, and but I think we're just having different ways of finding fun. Like our friends on a Friday, we'll all go to a spin class and then go to the pub.
Right.
So whereas before, we would have just went to the pub. so yeah, I think the landscape is changing for health, and I think online has got a lot to do with that because we can get information at our fingertips. But there's a downside to that as well because there's a lot of cowboys out there that are giving people wrong information around pseudoscience, and I think it became our job as well to work with the best scientists, nutritionists and dietitians to get the right word out there rather than just any word and throwing loads of shit at the wall.
I mean, there's so much out there. So let's just strip it back, girls, because we're throwing all words out there.
All the info.
Like microbiome and isn't that. First of all, what is your gut? Is it your stomach? Is it like literally talk to me like I'm an idiot because I really am.
It's basically everything from your mouth to your bumhole.
Okay, your gut is mouth to bumhole.
Mouth to bumhole.
And then the large intestine is the biggest bit of that, where most of your microbiome lives. So when we talk about the microbiome, we're talking about bacteria, yeast, fungi, basically everything in there that isn't human cells. So, there's a lot going on.
Before when we first started the research, they thought that the bacteria outnumbered your human cells 10 to 1. But it's actually, the science is still ever-changing, and they think it's about 1.32 now. But, I mean, it's changing all the time. But just to know that actually there's something that has the same ratio as human cells is, like, mind-blowing.
And why is this so important? Why do we need to care?
Yeah.
So it is the main gateway when you think about it. Because it's kind of common sense. Like, everything when we talk about it, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes... Like, we didn't do... we're not human biologists, like nobody knows, but it kind of makes sense that is from your mouth down there is the main gateway from the outside world inside. So what we are putting in our bodies, that's the main gateway, which kind of makes sense. Like also what you put in your skin affects it, but it's like 2 liters in your whole lifetime. You know, there was a big thing recently, like you absorb 60% of your skin. Like your skin's meant to be a barrier, so there's not that. So actually what you put in your mouth is the gateway. They think that most of your immune system is housed in your gut. They're also realizing that the vagus nerve, which runs from your brain to the neural connection between your brain and your gut, they thought that was a one-way system. So you know, when you get nervous you get butterflies, but they're realising that that's actually a two-way system. So if your gut's not functioning properly, that is sending signals back up to your brain. And the gut lining is permeable, so it's only one cell thick. So you can get, if you've got leaky gut, which has been sort of sensationalised a bit, but is a real thing, they're sending signals that are potentially can be inflammatory and stuff out into your blood, being like, there's a problem. Yeah, it's super important. I mean, we could go on for days, but
and they've got links now to a lot of autoimmune diseases like arthritis, but also things like Parkinson's and obviously mental health is the big one that's been coming out recently. So it's linked to so many different things. And actually, it's just a lot of time like that sort of one in three people now have a digestive issue, whether it be IBS, IBD, Crohn's, and we're starting to hear a lot more about it. But a lot of these illnesses and digestive issues are really debilitating for people. I think, you know, one in five people that have IBS don't go to work on certain days because of it. And that, you know, that's a big
epidemic.
That
was anything else, employees would be cracking down on it.
So you have like digestive issues, which is a big issue within itself, but then you also have this, that gut health is linked to absolutely everything. And you know, when we first started this research, we were like, yeah, but why does no one know about this, and why does no one know before? But I think it's because the science is still very new, it's very personalised. So if Lisa and I can't be sold the same thing, then how can everyone be sold the same thing? So how can you commercialise that? And you know what it's like, I mean, things come into public consciousness when people are making money out of them,
right?
So there's a lot of different reasons why a lot of people don't know about it yet, but it's a really exciting field and there's a lot of time and effort within science going into it. But it's complex, you know what I mean? Like, I think that's, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions with even the word gut. Do you know what I mean? It's not sexy.
It's not, but you guys are making it sexy. So before I ask any more questions, this is a call-in show, so let's let a member of the audience ask you guys something.
Hello? Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, Estee. My name's Jillian, and my question is, when do you know or how do you know that you might need some gut health help? Like, when do you know something's wrong, or when do you know when you might need to be taking something or eating something differently? I work at a Trader Joe's, so I hear a lot of stuff from customers, coworkers. You know, they drink kombucha, they take supplements. You know, I know sometimes that has to do with if you're on like a certain kind of diet. You know, if you're vegan or vegetarian, sometimes you're not getting the correct probiotics in your system, so sometimes you have to take supplements. But I'm not really sure if it's something that you know, everyone needs, or just people that are experiencing certain issues or have certain, you know, diets. Love the show. Thanks so much.
So there is, we've got a list of symptoms and stuff on the site. It's generally like people, like a bit of bloating is normal. But if you're constantly bloated and in a lot of pain, then there might be an issue there. You're meant to fart 14 times a day, which
I
didn't know.
Say that again.
You're meant to fart
14 times a day.
Wow.
I don't think I do. I must do most of it in my sleep. You know what you're thinking? I'm like, genuinely, I would admit it if I did, but I was like, oh. So farting, again, not an issue unless, again, it's painful. Obviously, I'm trying not to be diagnostic here, because I don't want to be diagnostic, but there's a list of symptoms on our site that if you've got, also the Bristol stool chart, have you heard of that before?
No.
Basically, it's a list of poos, and it's got, they've got like, it ranges from like, one is like, pop, it's hard, like hard to pass, and then seven is like soft, mushy,
diarrhea.
And you're aiming for like a 3 or 4. And if you're not regularly having like a 3 or 4 or middle, we explain all this on the site, then there might be an issue. But I always say the main way, like if you go to your doctor, and if you're in the States as well, it's a bit more different because obviously you have to pay for it. So you can get more personalised things than you can here. And you've probably got a bit more time. But write down what you're eating and if there's things that are triggering it. We've got a food diary. We're bringing one out with some stickers of the Bristol stool chart. Poo stickers, guys. Don't say we're not good to it. But yeah, I think if you log all that, you'll see if it's happening more often than not. And obviously, if it's debilitating you, like you're not leaving the house or you're not going out, then you have to speak to someone about it.
So it's stomach aches, not farting enough, cramps, or farting too much, cramps.
And then poos that are like one or two. Or 5, 6, 7 on the Bristol stool chart.
So poo is really important here.
Yeah.
You need to be knowing what's going on. Exactly. And how many times a day or week are we?
One a day. And I hate using the word toxins, because I actually met with one of the lead scientists, a guy called Julian Marchese at Imperial. And he was saying that, he was like explaining to me about bile acids and stuff the other day. But he was saying that you have to, like, this is why the fibre issue is massive. And we can get onto fibre in a minute. But you have to bulk your stool so that you pass them. Because when you think about it, you have to get rid of those toxins. And I hate using the word toxins because detoxes don't exist. And I hate that word.
Detoxes don't exist?
No, it's just nonsense.
I want to talk about that.
Yeah. All this stuff. And even like food intolerance tests, nonsense.
Food intolerance tests are nonsense?
Yeah, there's no scientific evidence behind a lot of these tests.
And the only thing that can detox is your liver.
Your liver. You've been built
with
something.
That's what it's there for.
So like detox teas, nonsense. All this antioxidant stuff. It's just... Mm-mm.
What is
we
it?
We spoke to all the scientists about it and they were like... It doesn't, like, your liver has been built to detoxify your system.
So how do you keep your liver healthy?
Not drinking. Yeah. No. It does, it will regenerate yourself. It's the one organ that can regenerate itself. But you should, if you poo once a day, it sort of makes sense. You're getting all the stuff that your body doesn't want out of there. So if you're keeping those toxins in, it's probably not a good thing.
So the poo stigma fascinates me because when we're babies, our mums and dads talk about poo all the time. Like, I've got friends that have kids, and it's like, woohoo, they pooed, or oh, they've got diarrhea. Oh. And then now, and then when you're kids, you love talking about poo. It's like that funny sort of thing in the playground. And then it's like, what age did we start doing it? It's the only thing that we all do, apart from dying and eating. That we all do, but yet none of us talk about it. And actually, it makes sense that, you know, we can talk about food for as long as we want, and it's literally the byproduct of that, but we just don't talk about
but
it.
But like, what, you just go say to your husband, just had the best shit of my life?
Yeah, oh my God, I love
she's
poo chat.
Which
like, I'm like, you know those ones where you don't have to wipe? Or like, you just wipe once? They're my favourite.
But, you know, now that we've opened this can of worms, like, we get so many people come up to us at gigs and stuff being like, I haven't pooed for 3 days. Or do I do, like, let's open up a can of poo chat.
Yeah.
I'm like, come in, chat to me. Chat to me.
So what about juice cleanses? Pointless?
Mm. I mean, if someone's got scientific evidence behind a juice cleanse, I would love to know. But
and as well, I think it's very, the problem with juice cleanses and things like that is we're all lacking having enough fibre in our diet anyway. So I think on average, we get about, in Western society, we get about 17 grams of fibre per day. We should be having 32. So there is fibre in fruit and veg, but not as much as and also, there is. There's a lot in fruit and veg, but probably not the fruit and veg that you would use in these sort of smoothies. I mean, for me, I think if someone's going to have a smoothie or juice in the morning and that's up in their fruit and veg level, crack on. That can only be a good thing. But I think only having juices and cleanses
and like
is dangerous.
And these skinny teas and detox teas and all that.
Just basically laxatives.
They're just putting laxatives in teas. And people think they're being detoxed because they're shitting themselves.
Yeah.
And it's really dangerous. And
I mean, that's a great thing to tell the Love Island audience.
Exactly.
Yeah. No shade. But
exactly. Oh, definitely.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even like, you go into Whole Foods stores here, and not Whole Foods, but like natural stores here, and they're full of these teas.
Yeah.
And they're just, it's so dangerous. Like, the amount of strain that these teas are putting on gastroenterologists and our healthcare system, because they're full of laxatives, and then when you stop taking them, you cannot poo. It's just really dangerous, and it's a dangerous message. I think there's, especially with juices and stuff, like the food is medicine thing can also be a dangerous message, because not one food is going to cure everything. It's just a really dangerous thing to say that this collection of foods can detox you or this collection of food can cleanse you. It's just, we get into really super shaky ground when we do that.
It's really funny how like a certain fruit or something can be sensationalized to the point where I was in Brooklyn a couple weeks ago and literally saw 8 million people with huge bags of celery.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This thing is utter nonsense, the celery thing. But it's because the Kardashians say it, everyone thinks it's gospel. It's like, come on, guys. Who should we be listening to, scientists or the Kardashians?
Well, why does no one want to be like listening to scientists? Is this
our thing.
The thing about science as well is that it takes a long time for things to get proven. And the reason that a lot of supplements and stuff have got good regulations and are backed by science is because they can pay, pharmaceutical companies can pay for the clinical trials. No one is going to really do a clinical trial around celery juice to see if it works, right? I mean, good luck to you if you are. But they're expensive, and in terms of like food products have to go through a massive process with food claims. But for a singular food, you're not going to really put that through a clinical trial. So people can sort of say what they want.
And it's so personal. Like, we break down, like if Lisa and I break down foods completely differently, and what's good for us isn't necessarily good for, what's good for me is like, my blood sugar spikes at bananas. Do you know what I mean? Where you'd think that would be healthy for you. So it's so personalised. And I think personalised nutrition will definitely come into play a lot over the next few years.
So speaking of that, everything is so personal. Mm-hmm. How do you begin this? Mm-hmm. I actually have an audio note all about this. So let's get to the next caller.
Hi, guys. It's Belle from Germany. I hope you're having a great day. So my question would be, how do I find out what types of food are good for me and which ones aren't? Because I eat so many different foods during the day that at the end of the day, I don't even know what might have caused the bloating, you know? And I have the feeling that so many people always know, okay, so that's very good for me, that's bad for me. And I don't even know how to do that. So maybe you can tell me what the way to go is there. Thanks so much.
So there is diagnostic tools to do that. So you can, there's a study, I think it's just in the UK at the minute, called Predict that we did, that we were the first people to do, where it actually measures your blood glucose spikes with different foods. So you'll get a rough idea what's good and what's bad. But not everyone can afford that. It's not available to everyone.
Is it a blood test or what?
You've got to do it for like 2 weeks. You've got to take bloods out 4 times a day.
It's a diabetes monitor and a microbiome test. So yeah, it's like
so
a whole...
your stool and stuff. It's like, and that's like a proper like clinical trial that you can take part in. The food intolerance tests, I mean, if anyone knows of one that has got scientific evidence behind it, let me know. But there is no way, unless you were eating that one food, that it would be able to, that they would be able to detect it. We have to go through trials for 2 months in order to get a good reading. The easy way to do it, as I said, is to write a food diary and log your trigger foods, because some foods will give you a reaction after 2 hours, some foods will give you a reaction after 24 hours, and you'll get, as well, like as soon as you go and see a nutritionist or a dietitian or even your doctor, they'll tell you to go away and do a 3-month food diary. You can get gluten intolerance tests, you can get tested for lactose intolerance,
and vitamin D deficiency,
but they those tests are, you can get them done at your GP. There's also other bodies like Genova Diagnostics, that's worldwide. They'll be able to tell you if you've got any viruses or pathogens and things like that. But a very small proportion of us are celiac, and for some reason, loads of people are taking gluten out of their diet. The thing about gluten is, it's not the gluten that's bad for you. It's the processed flour and all the nonsense that they're putting in it. So that's what I would say is, the first step would be to take loads of processed foods out of your diet, because then if you're logging your foods, you know exactly what's in it. Whereas if you've got a bar full of emulsifiers and xanthan gum and whatever other nonsense they put in it, it's going to be very difficult to pinpoint what's triggering you in that, because there's so much nonsense in it.
I think it's about tuning in as well. I think, like, we don't really tune into our bodies unless we're hungover or we're ill. Do you know what I mean? I think
when you're ill, mm-hmm. it's literally, you're like, I gotta start taking care of myself. Yeah. I'm drinking ginger and manuka honey, and then literally the minute I get sick, I'm like, McDonald's.
Vodka.
Where's the vodka? And I think it's about tuning in and really thinking about, and just, you know by your poo.
Okay, and I have so many questions. I don't even know where to begin. Oh my gosh. Okay, so I think what you said about you go to the GP or whoever, mm-hmm. and they say do a 3-month food diary, and I think that's where so many of us are like, well, fuck this, because nobody really wants to put the work in. We're all looking for a quick fix. But what you're saying is there is no quick fix, and you have to put your own personal work in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if there was a magic bullet, someone would be making money off it by now.
Right.
And it just doesn't exist. There is, there's a book called The Gut Makeover by Jeanette Hyde. She's great. And if that kind of, you restrict everything. So we did it a couple of Januaries ago, like dairy. And this is not a long-term thing. It's just for 4 weeks. But you restrict dairy, gluten, alcohol, fun. Like literally, it was the most boring January of my life. And then you reintroduce foods so you can see which ones trigger you. And that, if anyone is keen and wants to do that for 4 weeks, you do feel great, but it's not sustainable. And anyway, please do not stay in it for longer than 4 weeks. You do just have to put the work in. And you can go and see a nutritionist or a dietitian who will do tests on you. But even then, you can't be tested for... You'd have to eat that one food for a long time to figure out what it was doing to you.
Right.
And there's things that you can test, inflammatory markers and stuff like that. But, and we were like that when we first started. Like, there must be a magic bullet. And supplementation's hard as well, because probiotics...
Well, don't even get into that. That's okay, a whole separate question.
Okay, yeah.
But can you get your gut,
Analyzed?
Yeah,
you can get what we did. So there's commercial tests on the market.
How?
There's lots of different companies that are doing it. What I would say is that a lot of them are great and you get a good reading. So they'll be able to say, like, this is how much variety of different bacteria you've got. So variety, because they don't know what a good microbiome looks like, variety is good. They'll be able to tell you if you've got any pathogens or viruses in there. A lot of the commercial ones in the market won't. You have to go with someone like Genova Diagnostics for that. But and again, if anyone else knows of really detailed ones that you can get without having to do it through a clinician, let us know, because we're always on the lookout for new ones. But remember, that's one reading, so that's one poo. We had to do that every day for 2 months in order to get a good, accurate reading. And they're expensive. And they haven't been through enough scientific evidence yet to show that they can give an exact, specific reading for a long time.
Mm-hmm. But if you've got the money and you're curious,
then have a bash. Like, loads of our pals have done it since we've said. And you get quite a good reading, and you know there's good diversity. You know there's one called Alex Biomed that can give you like a probiotic rating. But again, these companies have to have enough data, like the Human Genome Project, to compare as many people as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So it's coming. We're about 5 years off personalised probiotics and stuff like that, and sending your poo off and being able to get a really good reading.
But we're still early stages. But
it's still early
say.
Stages. So if you've got the money, have a bash. But a food diet is a better way to do it because it's free.
Okay. And we spoke earlier about leaky gut.
Yeah.
So leaky gut, because I've seen so many bloody nutritionists, it's like unreal, but I never actually do anything about it. I'm just that makes a lot of sense, and just keep eating as normal. But so leaky gut, from my understanding, is when you have a tear or something in your gut where all of the toxins are being released into the bloodstream. Is this correct? Yeah. Am I saying that right?
It doesn't not have to be a tear. It's just maybe like that the permeability of it is isn't quite there.
Fine.
And it's sort of leaking out.
So how do you know if you have leaky gut? Is that another test or?
It's symptoms led, really.
Fine.
Which is difficult. And I think that's why you can't go to your doctor. They won't say you've got leaky gut.
Okay.
And it is a thing. But the problem is that a lot of people are, it's like, take some dandelion root. It's just such nonsense. And that's the difficult thing with something like that. Like, actually, biologically, it can happen because the lining's only one cell thick, so it does make sense. And there's these, is it Elotherium? It's getting too sciencey. But like your villi basically are like that. I'm just doing like a little octopus here. I know this is a podcast. We've again got lots of information on the site about it. If you
want to experts that talk about it, because we aren't really there.
Yeah. So we've got, this is a problem with the internet, I think, as well, is that a lot of people can say leaky gut and we've got a cure for this. If anyone's claiming to have a cure for leaky gut, they don't have one. And we've got an advisory board of scientists, we've got a team of nutritionists and dietitians, and we have GPs and stuff on all our panels. And you have to be so overly cautious with everything you put out there, because it's people's health, and it's like you said, people are desperate, they're looking for a magic bullet.
And leaky gut could be like misconstrued as IBS, IBD. You just don't. I mean, you could go to a nutritionist and say they've got a leaky gut, and it actually could be something a bit more serious.
IBD?
IBD is, so irritable IBS is disorder. Just, yeah, disease.
Disease.
So this IBS is just symptoms led, whereas IBD is an actual disease.
Mm-hmm. Like
IBS
Crohn's.
Is just like Crohn's.
Okay.
But yeah, we are looking at more sort of branching out the site to be able to give people more advice when they have a clinical issue.
Mm.
But it's difficult when they're not sitting in front of you. Or
right.
You can't,
And say you have a lot of gut health problems, can you fix it?
Yeah,
can
absolutely.
You become a new human again?
You can.
Yeah, so when we were doing the research, we changed our microbiome. Mine was like on the floor because I was like, had loads of antibiotics, drinking loads, bad diet. And as part of the research, they actually put us purely on processed diets. And we managed to change it in 2 weeks, like drastically in 2 weeks.
Wow.
So that was the one good thing about the research. So we were obviously the first set of twins to have it done. But they did it on like hundreds of other sets of twins after and realised the same thing. So two things was that the first thing was that everyone was unique, and they were like, okay, that's interesting because it's environmental and it's not your DNA. And secondly, because it's environmental, you can change it, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so many success stories on the site because we have like a free Ask Nutritionist service. So we get a lot of inbound queries. And not all of them are negative. Like some of them are obviously really worrying, like I haven't left the house for 3 years. But a lot of them are like, I've managed to heal my gut through X, Y, and Z. But I think the difficult thing with the internet is that if you type heal your gut in, you'll get all sorts of woo-woo nonsense that comes up.
And you can't necessarily heal it. It's like an ongoing thing. It's like, mm-hmm. My gut's not in good shape after on a Sunday morning after a Saturday night out. Do you know what I mean?
But your microbiome can change it and get worse and get better. But at the minute, we don't, even saying worse and better, like we don't know what a good microbiome is yet.
Right.
But the scientists are getting there. It's exciting.
So it seems like the trick is, do not eat processed foods.
Yeah, that's the simplest thing. And variety is another key one, like another simple one that you can do, because variety, it kind of makes sense. So there's a family of bugs in there, essentially. And we kind of live in a generation of meal prep. And also just habitually, you're like, right, peppers, I know what to do with them, I'll get them.
But if you think of it like a rainforest, like your gut like a rainforest, you should be feeding it the things in the rainforest, lots of different things, and they'll all like the same thing. Like all the bacteria don't like to eat the same thing,
so right,
they eat different things. And some of the bacteria, like we've got a new thing in one of the books where it's like we've got a job description for each of the bacteria. Some of them come out at night, they're on night shift, and they like clean up everything that's been going on throughout the day, but and they all like to eat different things. But until we know each bacteria do, and we're quite a few years in research off from that, you're literally throwing shit at the wall. So if you're eating a lot of variety of plant-based foods,
yep,
like fruit and veg and nuts come into that as well. So they say like 30 a week, 30 different kinds.
Yeah, it's I quite didn't a lot, even know there were got, 30 different
I know,
kinds.
I know. So in Western society, your average person will have access to 56 different types of fruit and veg in their local supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be like almonds, cashews, green pepper, red pepper, and different colours mean different things as well.
Right.
So actually, like, I did exactly the same thing when we first started. I was like, 30? No way can I get that.
We've got a veggie checklist as well on the site that you can download, and it's like a little challenge.
This website seems like the Bible.
It's sort took of. Us a while to populate it.
Yeah.
You didn't just do that overnight?
I wish.
At least it's not got your rubbish logo on it anymore.
Yeah. I sort of think, like, if you're having a soup, you've probably got 6 different vegetables in there. So right. It's easier than you think it is.
And what about sugar?
They don't really know.
Well, that's music to my ears.
Yeah. They don't really know because we all process sugar in different ways.
Processed sugar is probably not
good for you.
Yeah, yeah. So, but that kind of makes sense because the stuff that you're having, your chocolate bars and stuff, there isn't,
mm-hmm.
like, there's probably not good stuff in that either. And they have emulsifiers and stuff in it to preserve them. But I think we kind of demonise sugar a bit. And in terms of gut health, the evidence isn't there yet.
But I think it'll come. I think we've got a lot of people.
We've got a couple of articles on sugar and wheat on the site.
Mm-hmm.
Megan Rossi's wrote them for us, and she's great. And there will be more studies coming out in terms of how that interacts with the bacteria. But again, Alana and I spike at different. Our blood glucose levels spike at different things, so it's difficult. Some people can process probably sugar quite easily, and others can't. So.
Well, let's just talk about the subject, and this is the reason why everybody's here, including me, probiotics and prebiotics.
The minefield.
So just to preface with what prebiotics and probiotics are, because I think people have probably heard of probiotics, but they don't know what prebiotics are. So probiotics are the good bacteria. So probiotics are good bacteria, and prebiotics are the food for the good bacteria.
So, and the bacteria is transient, so it goes in and leaves. So people would say, yeah, but like, all the studies that are coming out, and everyone's like, yeah, but they don't stay in your gut. They're not supposed to stay in your gut. They're transient. They go in, they do their job, they leave. So they're renting, and the prebiotics are the food. So they've like bought
fertilizers.
They're like the fertilizers.
The farm.
For the good. So in a way, prebiotics is an easier message. So you can get prebiotics and probiotics through both food and food supplements. Prebiotics foods include stuff like garlic, leeks. There's a thing called prebiotic inulin, which is really good food for your good bacteria. They're found in like Jerusalem artichokes, ripe
chicory,
unripe bananas, so great green bananas, chicory. So the king and queen is like Jerusalem artichokes and chicory. And then probiotics is like fermented food, so kefir, kombucha, sauerkraut. Sourdough is like the entry level. That's where we get our mum on, because she's like, mum's like, makes me gag, all that stuff, makes me gag. and then the supplementation, you can get prebiotic supplements, so things like inulin powder that you can add to your drinks and smoothies and things to up your inulin, so up the food for the good bacteria. And then you can also get, which is the minefield, probiotic supplements.
So it's Monday morning, I'm starting the week fresh, and I'm going to take my probiotic supplement. Is everything going to be okay now?
We wish. So the thing about probiotic supplements is that you have to look at is, it. People focus a lot on, is it a liquid, is it a pill, it's got a coating, so that means it's not surviving the stomach wall. The thing that we have to focus on for now, until the science catches up, is the different strains. So the different strains in your probiotic do different things. So there's like, people put in packaging, 1 trillion, 1 billion, 1 squillion cultures.
Yeah, I'm like, billion and trillion.
Yeah,
and
yeah. And that is, yes, if you have lots of different strains in there and you might need one of them, that there's a logic to that, but it's not necessarily true. So there's different strains for different things. And what I would suggest you do is, when you're buying a probiotic, very loosely, the expensive ones have probably been for the most clinical trials. There's a few brands that we work with that we know have been for them, so you sort of pay for what you get. But on saying that, there's a thing called PubMed, which isn't, unfortunately, to search pubs in London, but, and you can put different strains of bacteria in there. So if you just look at your packaging and put the strain of bacteria in, you can see what clinical trials it's been through, the strain, not that particular product.
Right.
We've got a full series on this on the site, and okay. It's like 6 videos long, and Alana and I explain the back of packages and the hierarchy of evidence. So there's a different hierarchy of evidence. So there's everything from like anecdotal evidence, that's someone just saying, right up to like randomised control trials and stuff like that. So it's getting a bit sciencey, but we explain it all on the site really simply, and it helps you to read the packaging to see which probiotics have been through what trials.
Okay, and eating yogurt, this is good.
Good.
Make sure it's live yogurt. If you like the taste of kefir, so kefir is just fermented yogurt. That's the best.
Because it's got the widest range of different bacteria in it.
And it's in loads of supermarkets now. It's really accessible, and actually it's super cheap to make yourself.
So if you're vegan, you take a supplement. Are the supplements vegan?
You can get water kefir.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's kefir grains similar, but it's made with water.
Interesting.
So it's different grains. Don't try and put your milk ones in water, so they'll die. the thing about probiotic supplement as well is that if you don't need that type of bacteria,
you're wasting your money.
It is a waste of money. But if you've got the money and, you want to throw shit at the wall like all the veg, then go for it. If it makes you feel better, carry on. Give it 2 weeks. If it's making you feel better, if it's not, then it's kind of common sense. Like, if you take it and it makes you feel better and you've got the money, go for gold.
Okay.
I take it because I try and get on my fruit and veg in, but you know what it's like. We all live busy life. So if I can take my probiotic in the morning, traveling, I know I've got a good start.
Yeah.
But I think it'll be exciting times, probiotics, in the next 3 or 4 years. Yeah. But for just now, it's like any medication when it first... probiotics are actually a food supplement. They aren't medical... a medical product as yet, but I think that will change.
I know you guys worked with one of my favorite skincare brands, Galenay.
Yeah.
And that's a probiotic skincare brand.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
So
that's how I discovered you guys, actually.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh. The thing about the skin microbiome is that, again, the research is still quite new. But if you use probiotic skincare and it improves your skin, then go for gold. The evidence is still new.
Yeah.
We're actually speaking... with the owner of Galenay in Barcelona at the microbiome conference. She's at that one, or is it the one in Rotterdam?
I don't know. I can't remember.
She's awesome.
She's great.
Yeah.
And did you have Anjali Matto on?
Yes, she said that it's all false.
Yeah, I know.
So we always have, this is the thing with science.
So we have them together.
So we have Anjali on panels and we talk about it. So we have to put everyone together.
And we normally, it's like the raw milk or don't raw milk theory. Like, we just put both up and say, here's the evidence for both, or here's the argument for both, decide for yourself.
Exactly.
And that's what we've done with skincare as well, because actually everyone's going to be different. And
a lot of people contacted us saying, look, I've started taking Galenay, my eczema's gone or whatever. So it's difficult for us, but we do say on the site, yes, the science is new for this. If you buy it and it works for you, please go for gold. And that's why we did the collaboration with them, because we basically wanted to educate people around the microbiome in general. So
exactly.
That's why we did. So it's like, what have you got to lose on that? If people are learning about the
educating
skin microbiome
themselves
and educating about the gut microbiome whilst they're taking, I think...
It's like a makeup brand, though. Do you know what I mean? If it works for you and it...
Right.
Does it,
and all
good
I
or
will
bad?
Say is that the creator of Galenay is one smart cookie.
She's amazing. And she's a microbiologist, so she knows what she's talking about.
I want to get her on the show.
She totally should.
Yeah.
I'm getting her on.
So speaking of skin, I know there's a lot of talk about, skin in relation to gut health and dairy and blah, blah, blah. And we actually have a question about that.
Mm-hmm. Hello, my name is Joelle. I'm from Canada. So here's my situation. I've been dealing with acne since I was 14 and I'm now 20. I can say that I've tried everything. I think I went on antibiotics, I've tried natural skincare, almost everything. And my last resort was Accutane. So I did that, and 1 year after my treatment, my acne came back. So I've started doing a lot of research about gut health and how it can be linked to acne. A lot of people have had success with changing their diet. So yeah, from what I've read, I should cut out sugar, gluten, and dairy. And the hard part for me is really cutting out sugar. I already don't consume refined sugars, but I put maple syrup in everything and I eat a lot of fruits. But apparently, from what I've read, even natural sugars can cause inflammation. So, I've been doing that for a week now, incorporating more healthy fats and more protein into my diet, cutting out sugar and everything. And I can say that my skin is a little less inflamed. But I wanted to know, what are your thoughts on the link between gut health and skin and acne? So thank you so much.
Is there a relationship?
Yeah, I mean, Raccoon, I feel you. I had that as well, but yes, and Anjali has got a lot of great articles about this. I would do her a disservice if I tried to. But she does a lot of talks for us about skin and the microbiome. And yes, obviously what you're putting in your body is going to affect your skin, because that's, and if you've got an allergic reaction, or you've got, if what you're eating is causing inflammation, then yes. And also your hormones are really produce, a lot of your hormones are produced in your gut. So yes,
and a lot of female acne is hormonal.
It's difficult without knowing the person, and it is personalised, but I would probably point you towards Anjali's thing, and we've got, again, articles on our site about it, on things you can try. What I will say is there isn't a magic bullet of cutting something out, mm-hmm. or having other loads of fish oils in your diet and suddenly your skin's going to change.
Right.
I mean, if that happens for you, then woo-hoo.
Great.
Yeah, and the restrictive thing can be dangerous, because you can restrict something. Like our cousin, for example, this is purely anecdotal, her eczema so bad, she started taking a probiotic and cut out dairy from her diet, and her skin is absolutely perfect. My boyfriend's the same. He has got skin like a rhino's husk, and he claims that if he doesn't have dairy, it improves.
Literally, the amount of dudes who have told me that.
Yeah, but yeah. He never does it.
To bear in mind, if she's been on antibiotics, that really affects your gut, because it's basically like a nuclear bomb. And also, a lot of dairy now has antibiotics in it, especially with cow's milk from the supermarket. So it could be the amount of antibiotics you're having through dairy, or is creating.
And the antibiotic problem. Thing is really interesting to me. I was on a lot of antibiotics as a kid, and it basically just fucks you for life.
Yeah. Absolutely. But the thing is, the difficult thing with antibiotics is they save lives. So
right,
you can't be like, don't take antibiotics because it's potentially dangerous.
It's yeah. overuse of antibiotics.
Yeah, and it's, we've got, again, on the site, we've got videos on this, because there's new evidence to suggest that taking a probiotic with an antibiotic doesn't work, because they can't colonize. Because if you think about it, antibiotics are like a nuclear bomb on the bacteria. They kill all of the bacteria, good and bad, which makes sense because they're trying to get rid of the bad things that are going on. But you have to repopulate that back. So your gut, you're just basically going back to square one after antibiotics. Mm. Again, we've got like loads of...
But in a lot of countries, when you're given an antibiotic, you're actually given a probiotic for after, and within yeah. your prescription. But the overuse of antibiotics is a thing, like we've seen it everywhere. Mm-hmm.
And antibiotic resistance and everything is scary. And they're now used to treat C. difficile in hospitals, fecal transplants. So you basically get someone else's poo up your bum.
Stop it.
Yeah.
which repopulates yeah. your own, you're getting a new microbiome in there, but repopulates with lots of different types of bacteria.
So,
mind blown or not?
I actually want to talk about the colonoscopy thing, or whatever it is.
Colonic.
That's what it is. Don't do it.
Please do not do that.
Because I'm like really ready to book that appointment.
Yeah, no, I got, like, do you know what? I got one done when I was about 18. I'm not even sure why. I don't know where I got the money from. You know, I don't know why I've done this. She said to me that I'd had meat in there for 7 months or something like that. And she was obviously trying to get me to come back to go for more. And I was like, I'm a student, I'm poor. No. But if you think about it, you are scooshing all the good bacteria out as well. So your stomach is then, you feel quite good after it because you feel lighter because you've got no poo.
Apparently you feel euphoric.
But yeah, I think you probably are going to, because it's like anything. It's like after a Bikram yoga class, you just want to eat healthy.
True.
So
yeah. For at least an hour.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like a reset. Like, so I think it's like that sort of thing rather than it actually being good for you.
There is a lot of stuff online about that, because a lot of people, like, I mean, I just wouldn't advocate it.
Fine.
That's the long and short of it. Mm-hmm. But if you go, I mean, yeah, I'm not going to tell anyone not to do it, but yeah, you're flushing out the good stuff as well as the bad stuff. And your stomach needs to be able to function
on its
by
own.
Itself, which is the same thing as detox teas and skinny teas and all that. If you're forcing your stomach to behave in a way, with extreme measures, just, you've got to let it sort of work out for itself.
Coffee enemas. What do you think?
Well, drinking coffee through normal means. So coffee is actually really high in polyphenols, which are good for your gut.
Really? But also coffee can irritate the gut lining.
Okay. So but caffeine, so coffee is good for your gut. Caffeine ain't so good.
Now so, I'm confused.
Yes. I know. So it's a balance night. So for me, I'm like, well, one's good, one's bad. I'm going to have coffee because I enjoy it. And
well, that's the thing about coffee is, or all of these things. I think with alcohol, we've got the ability to think critically about it. Like we all go, do you know what? I like the taste of it. It makes me make some questionable decisions, but I'm going to do it anyway. So it's like you kind of weigh up the pros and cons. With food, we all have a really binary relationship with food. Like this food is bad and this food is good and I'm going to cut out sugar and coffee and everything. And it's like, actually, if we thought more about food in general, like we do about alcohol or like we do about Love Island, like I always say the same thing. Like people say Love Island's not a good representation of the UK, blah, blah, blah. Emmerdale is not a good representation of the UK. We're not expecting these young kids. They represent 0.001% of the population. They are Greek goddesses. Honestly, they all look incredible.
I love the
no
show.
One's saying, like, no one's expecting anyone to look like that. But what we're missing is a critical thinking piece in young people to go, do you know what? They probably have worked really hard to look like that and or they were born with it. Fair enough. Mm-hmm. And I think that we need to have the same thing with food. There isn't a magic bullet. No food and just get away from food is good and bad type thing.
Back to the coffee thing. What about the bulletproof coffee thing?
Yeah, I tried that for a while. I quite enjoyed it, but I haven't seen much science on it. But I quite liked it for a while and then I just got bored.
I just thought it made me buzzy too quickly.
Right.
So I was like, what?
Should we all go vegan tomorrow?
I think veganism is a big episode. For me, I think it's based more around moral issues than health issues. Just
also,
now.
Meat isn't necessarily bad for your gut. And as we said, it's personalised, so some people have issues with red meat. The one thing, the good thing to come from veganism, obviously let's put aside the moral and ethical stuff, is that people are experimenting more with lots of different types of plant-based veg, which is great for your microbiome because people are having more variety in their diet because people get into a bit of a rut of like, right, I just have chicken
meat
and,
two veg.
And blah, 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 like meat and two veg. But if you're having lots of different things and you're eating things like tofu and tempeh, which is actually high in prebiotics as well. Is it prebiotics or probiotics for tempeh? Maybe it's probiotics.
I think the hard thing with veganism is such an overhaul of life, of your life. And it's becoming a lot easier now for people to do, but a lot of people turned to veganism and found it difficult to socialise or go out for dinner, and then that causes stress, which is a completely new thing.
I think with all the restrictive things as well, like a lot of the products, in order to bulk them out, and the same with like breads, like gluten-free bread and all that sort of thing, they're putting other stuff in them to bulk them out that isn't necessarily good for you, like processed stuff.
Fine.
I think it's like, you know, I do meat-free month. I've definitely cut down the amount of dairy and meat that I eat, but I don't think I would ever go to the extreme of saying that I was a vegan. And I think food classing people into categories is difficult as well. But
if you identify as that and you've got reasons for that, then
I would like to see more science on it.
Okay, fair enough.
I'd like to see. Yeah, I think. I would like more people to be doing science behind veganism. I'd be interested to know what that means. We are not vegans ourselves and we're not veggie either. Yeah. We're probably predominantly veggie, but I think it would be interesting to see how it plays
this is
out.
Kind of a random question, but what effect does smoking cigarettes have on your gut? Does it have any?
I don't think they've got
any. No, they do, but smoking is bad for the microbiome. Mm.
Is it?
Yeah.
So I smoked from when I was 11 till I was 24.
Really?
Yeah.
Whoa, 11?
I know.
Oh, girl.
Hello, Scotland.
Working class Scotland, eh?
Okay.
And then just sort of stopped randomly sort
of thing. We'll ask a scientist that, actually, and see what evidence.
I'd quite like to know.
Just to keep my own curiosity.
Yeah.
Because I was talking to somebody about smoking cigarettes and how it can cause anxiety.
Oh, really? Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I just wonder if it has any correlation. Yeah. But
we'll find out.
I would like to talk about, as the last point, mental health in relation to the gut. Mm-hmm. So I have heard that if you are having gut health problems, it can actually cause depression.
Yeah.
Is this true? And fatigue and this whole thing? Like, I'm tired, man.
Yeah.
Brain fog is real. I know. It's
difficult.
I mean, the answer is yes, but it's new. Kimberly Wilson is amazing. She's at Food and Psych on Instagram.
Get her on this. Amazing.
She is a queen.
Okay.
And she is a psychologist, but she also works in food. She was also on the Great British Bake Off. True story. But she talks about this amazingly, and it's this kind of perpetual cycle of even as well. So there's the kind of actual physical thing, like we're talking about the vagus nerve. So we've now realised it's a two-way system. So they're realising that not only is the motorway, there's a motorway down and up, but there's like 10 different pathways on that motorway. So there's a lot of signals flying up and down there, and they can go both ways. So biologically, it's legit. Also, when you think about it psychologically, if you're stressed and you're restricting what you're eating, then that's going to have effect on your gut. So it's like a perpetual cycle that needs to be broken at some point.
Difficult message though, because you can't just tell someone with depression or anxiety to
have a bit
better
of sauerkraut,
right, and they'll feel better.
Right.
It's so multifactorial. Behaviour and lifestyle is a huge part to play, and also where you live in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, some things that you can help, some things that you can't help. So I think we're a long way off. The correlation is there, right. The science points to it, but I think we're a long way off being able to say that we can help mental health.
But there's a lot of things coming out, a lot of them have been done on mice, but there is some on humans where they've taken two groups of respondents and given one a probiotic and given and done yoga with the other, for example. And there's studies that we can point anyone that wants to them. But it's still small groups of people. It's mental health is multifactorial, so there's lots of different things at play. What I would say is there is a direct link between stress and the microbiome. Mm-hmm. So that can directly affect what's going on in your gut, and that anecdotally I think we all sort of know that,
right?
And I think that's just more your reason to do things like yoga and practice mindfulness. And it's so easy saying to people that live in big cities or wherever, it's going, just be less stressed, man. And you're like, get away. But I think
namaste,
just knowing
my
friends, yeah, namaste. I think just knowing that there's a link sometimes helps.
Fine.
And that you can, that one can help the other. And but yeah, Kimberly Wilson is, go and look at her. She's
okay,
great. She talks about it. If you want to get really sciencey, she's amazing.
Okay. One thing I will say that a nutritionist told me is that the fatigue comes from if your body is like trying to process all these foods that are, you know, really tough to work, and you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Your body can actually get tired from processing the foods that are bad for you.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense, like the fight or flight thing. Do you want to?
I was just going to go into.
So, like when we were cavemen, we would. We would go and kill something and you'd be full adrenaline and drag it back to the cave. By the time you got back to the cave, your sympathetic system as it was down, and your body's like, okay, I'm ready for food. And then you eat your buffalo or whatever it is that you'd think. But now we live in a world where we're constantly switched on. So constantly we've got adrenaline and cortisol pumping through our bodies. So it's pumping through, trying to get us through everyday life because it's in fight mode and not in digestion mode. And that kind of makes sense, that the blood's not there, your body's thinking about something else, it's not digesting, we're eating sandwiches on the go, we're
literally
doing this, we're doing that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, that's kind of common sense, but there is science to suggest that that's why.
It just reminded me of literally downing a falafel wrap on the way here, walking up the stairs.
I know. And you're also meant to chew your food 30 times, one bit. I mean, just almost impossible. I'm like a hoover, but
same.
We should be consciously trying to eat better in terms of sitting down and actually thinking about it. And actually, it just makes you feel fuller for longer. And you know, there's a lot
of body, right, I'm ready to eat. Kick in, pal. Go on, digestive system. And as well, if you're chewing loads, your body's like, right, okay, I know what I'm.
Yeah. You mentioned the caveman thing. Should we all be doing the caveman diet or whatever?
These diets is like,
we shouldn't. I mean, when we say diet, I think the word diet's difficult.
Yes,
and it suggests restriction. And I just think we should be thinking about adding things rather than taking away. And actually, personalization is, they say that the most general diet we should all be trying to follow is the Mediterranean diet.
Okay.
So that's like,
but when we say diet, we don't mean diet as restrictive. We mean like that
Mediterranean
lifestyle.
So what I'm hearing is this. We need to eat more fruit and vegetables.
Right.
We need to have a more balanced diet of all different types of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's okay if you mess up and get wasted on a Saturday night.
Absolutely. Who cares?
We can revisit this on Sunday and everything's going to be fine.
Yeah.
So what are just like simple everyday things people can do if they're listening to this and they're thinking, you know what, I want to get my shit together and I want to get my microbiome on check.
On fleek.
On fleek.
So fiber. Fiber is a big key thing that we're not all getting enough of.
Where do we get fiber?
So you get fiber from things like lots of veg.
Fruit and veg.
Yeah,
oats,
fruit and veg. Oats.
Yeah, like any, we've like wholemeal stuff, we've got a list on the site. So fiber has two
jobs.
Like uses. It's got two jobs. So it bulks your stool, makes your stool bigger, easier to pass.
Bigger means better when it comes to poop.
Well, it just bulks out so that you're able to pass it. Do you know what I mean? It's not going to chill in there for ages. Do you know what I mean? Although, yeah, I mean, Alana would say
not
so
like the Hulk.
But also, fiber feeds the good bacteria. In your gut. So it's got a double whammy. It's just great. We're all fiber starved
because of the like Atkins diet and low carb bullshit.
Right. Yeah. So that's the easiest swing. And then also like the sanitization of stuff, like go and play in the, let your kids play in the mud, kiss your dog. Like I think as I said before, there's 200 species of bacteria we'll never get back. Please don't be afraid. A lot of bacteria is good. Like I've had E. coli. I've been in intensive care with E. coli.
For real?
For 2 weeks, yeah. And my body was trying to fight it off and I am still not scared of bacteria. So it's, yeah. I don't know how I got it, but anyway.
I'd say try fermented foods. So I'm not saying go and just have loads and loads of sauerkraut, because actually the thing is, if you have a digestive issue, and everyone starts slowly on the fermented foods, one because
or
of the
fiber,
taste
and fiber slowly.
Just because your body can't cope with it. I think, you know, like we all hear these things and then we go out and we have 10 bowls of cereal or the good type of cereal and have a big jar of sauerkraut and our tummies just go, no, thank you. Mm-hmm.
Well, can I just say one thing about this? I saw a nutritionist and I was telling her my stomach actually gets upset if I eat a salad. And she was like, that makes total sense to me because you've been raised on fast food and like a lot of processed stuff. So when your body gets this like lettuce in your stomach, it's like, whoa, what's that?
Yeah. And raw food is more difficult to digest. So some nutritionists will say that there is some people that say no raw after 4, so don't have any raw food.
No raw after 4.
Yeah. Well, but I have it and I'm fine. Yeah. Figure out what works for you. I'd say like, it's like not this thing. I think for so many years we've all done this big like overhaul of things like detox and just go mental. And I just think slowly but surely, small changes, small lifestyle changes. Yeah. It's sustainable and also your body will be able to cope with it
better. We've talked about pretty much everything else apart from fasting.
So okay.
There's a lot of evidence to suggest that intermittent fasting can improve your gut health.
And people don't eat until like 1 in the afternoon and stuff like that.
It's a really difficult message for us because the majority of our audience is 16, 25-year-old girls, and telling girls not to eat or telling anyone not to eat, dangerous message. But a lot of people, there is evidence, there is scientific evidence, like Michael Mosley talks about it a lot. If you want to look at anyone, then he's a good guy to look at about it. To suggest that if you're resting your gut, all the bacteria and different bits and bobs, like I was saying about the jobs, are able to do their jobs if your body is not constantly in digestion.
But that can be easy. It can be, you know, stopping eating at 10 p.m. and not eating again until 10 a.m. Do you know what I mean? Just 12 hours. I mean, and you're sleeping majority of that. Easy
so
peasy.
Apparently like 16 hours is the optimum.
Okay.
But if you can get 12 hours in, like I get hangry. Alana can fast for days, but I'm like, no.
And water, is that very crucial?
Yeah,
hydrate.
Especially if you're up in your fiber.
Even tap water, London tap water, that's
well, this is a whole new issue. Because I get asked that a lot. And one of the scientists said, no, the good, keep drinking tap water because there's actually minerals in there that help us. And your body will filter out the bad stuff anyway. And then we have one that said that we should all go to filter water. So I actually don't know about that. I have filtered water. And I mean, there is a lot of evidence to show that London tap water ain't that good.
Right.
Apparently it's got lots of, this is not scaremongering, but apparently it's got lots of the pill and cocaine in it.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah.
But if I can get a little dose of coke in the morning.
Exactly. Woohoo! That'll make you go.
You don't need your bullet. That'll make you go.
And also steroids, I think, are in it because a lot of people and estrogen and then we breathe air. Like think of the pollution we have in London. It's like
birth control.
Birth control,
hormones, still new.
Yeah, still a new field.
A lot of the science that's coming out about hormones is to do with the menopause, which kind of makes sense,
right?
But I don't have hormonal contraception because it makes me mad, and I feel out of control with it. So
have you heard of We Are Moody? It's like a hormone app.
Oh, you need to get her on as well. She's really good.
Also, I think logging your... So I like log my periods. And this is another thing to do with the symptoms in lots of different apps. I use one called Flow. Mm-hmm. It's like a little feather. I don't know why they all try to make these things really feminine. It's like, who cares? But it's quite good because my different things, my cycle, my digestion changes. So like I become really constipated just before my period. And
or you have hungry and you crave chocolate. Like when I'm due, the week of my period, I'm like, give me chocolate right
now. Oh my God, I know.
I wake up dreaming of chocolate.
Yeah, same. Nutella on the jar.
So I'm going to be writing everything down. I'm literally going to be like 15 cookies, half a brick of cheese, just write it all down.
I used to lie. Even when we're at the hostel, I used to lie. And then Tim used to be like, Lisa, you're hooked up to four scientists at any one time. Like, we know you've had 8 Proseccos. And I'm like, okay.
How much can these girls drink?
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah,
a lot is the answer.
A lot.
But there's quite a lot of apps now to log foods, which make it easier, right, I think. Yeah. You can scan them and all that sort of thing.
Or we'll have like a workbook ebook out in the next month or so that everyone can download and add in.
Okay, well, this has been, honestly, I've been looking forward to this for so long. Where can people find you guys and learn? Because I'm literally about to go home and watch like all the videos.
Hey, sorry, you're going to have to see our faces for like
apologies.
At the Gut Stuff and just thegutstuff.com, and then we're just at the Mac Twins.
All right,
if
thank
you want
you
to see us, the nonsense that we put up on the Mac Twins.
Mac Twins is DJ World. Gut Stuff for tubbies.
I want to come see you guys DJ.
Oh my God,
you're
come.
More than welcome.
I like to party.
You are more than welcome. We'll have kombucha cocktails.
Okay.
And you can watch us.
There's booze in that?
Yeah.
I'll be there.
Gin or vodka.
Thank you guys.